everyone. How you doing? It's your favorite agent, Travis Williams, Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate Metro Brokers. Today, I do have another great guest that we're going to sit and talk about all the process that you need to go through on in real estate from before purchasing all the way through purchasing a house. Introduce yourself.
Right, what's going on, everybody? I am Remarcus Steele in the acting world, vigilante in the rest of the entertainment world. And for everything else that I'm about to get into, just pick a name for whatever you want to call me.
That's why I let him say which name he wanted to put in here first, because I don't want to just throw everything off. So you've been doing all right?
Yeah, man, everything's been good. I cannot complain. God is good.
Right, right. You're doing good work out there anyway, so that's a
Thank
great
you.
Thing.
I appreciate the acknowledgement.
Right. So yeah, we've had our conversations, and you know, we said we need to have this in front of everyone so they can understand all the types of conversations that I have and friends of mine have about this real estate industry. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'll rewind for everyone that we kind of go start from the beginning again and say, hey, I'm interested in purchasing a home. You've had some people that have come to you and expressed this. And so we've had to start them from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. To where the first thing they have to do is go and get this approval letter. Mm-hmm. Go and talk to a loan officer, find out from their debt to income ratio. And
well, how much are you doing the synopsis right now, or are you giving the step?
Just the steps.
Well, I want you to break that down, what that means. What is the approval letter and how do you get that?
So that approval letter, once they go to a loan officer, they have to show how much money they have made in the last 2 years, because mm-hmm. they will have to give them their checks. I mean, their W-2s. They also have to give them their current check stubs to see that they're making money right now. So they take that and they look at their credit report from Equifax, TransUnion, Experian. Mm-hmm. Take the highest and the lowest of those two scores, no matter which one it is, and they throw them out. And they only use that middle credit score. Then they formulate through the process behind the scenes in the computer, and it gives them a number as to how much they would qualify for.
Okay.
So that's how they get to that number.
And by lender, you the bank or a private lender?
Right, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Which one have you seen the best results with?
Private lender. Because if you go to big bank only gives you their process. Mm-hmm. So you go to, again, any big bank, they won't defer from anything, whatever their set standards are.
Okay, I see.
But if you go to a private lender, or as I call them, a mortgage broker, mm-hmm. they can actually kind of shop your loan to different banks.
Oh, that's what a mortgage broker is.
Right.
Okay. That's too fancy of a term to just say lender.
Right. Well, that's what they actually do.
Okay.
So a lender is anybody that can do loans.
Okay.
A mortgage broker basically finds a better place for you based upon your situation, because everyone's situation is different.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
So you might go to big bank, and big bank says, well, no, you don't meet our standards. You don't qualify. But mm-hmm. that doesn't mean that you don't actually qualify for something.
Oh.
That's why you go to that mortgage broker.
Okay.
And they might go through it and say, okay, we found someone that will get you qualified for this loan that will suit your needs.
So you would say 9 times out of 10, if a person is keeping a decent credit score, has at least 2 W-2s, has proof of income for the past 2 years and mm-hmm. currently, that 9 times out of 10 or 8 times out of 10, a private lender will get them approved for some amount.
Yes. And I'll say even closer than to more than 10 times out of 10, because
that's big.
It also depends. But the main part of it depends on what your credit score is.
OK,
so if you are one of those that are maxed out on your credit cards, or you have defaulted on loans, be it a car loan, be it just whatever else that you might have done, some negative debt on your credit cards, or when you didn't pay for certain bills here and there, it affects your credit score. So if as long as those are basically on the up and up, then yes, go ahead and apply for a loan, because you never know what that amount's going to be. Mm-hmm. Now, it might not be what you're looking for. They might only approve you for, let's say, $150,000. You say, well, hey, I'm looking more or less in this $250,000-$300,000 range. Mm-hmm. Well, they're able to walk you through and let you know what you need to do to possibly clean up your credit, pay your credit cards down to a certain amount, clean up some of these negative things that are on your credit, mm-hmm. and that will increase your score. Plus your debt-to-income ratio. Because if you have too much debt, which is basically included in paying your credit card bills down, you have too much debt versus the income that you have coming in, that affects your score. Mm-hmm. They want that debt to income ratio not to be close. It needs some separation in between those two.
I see. So would you say that people are gearing more toward, if you have the proof of income, that they're willing to forgive or overlook the credit score?
No, they're going to look at credit score, period.
Okay, so that's a factor regardless.
Right, yes.
So you would say that that's like the main thing to attack, like overall in the process, to before you get your approval.
Well, so they will let you know whether or not that credit score is worthy of getting into something.
Okay.
And or getting an approval. And if it isn't, they'll walk you through the steps to get there. Because their goal in the end is to help you get approved for something.
Okay.
That's their goal. And if you run across a lender that does not say, hey, here's what you need to do mm-hmm. to get this done, then you don't need to be dealing with them.
I see.
If they say, oh, yeah, I'm sorry, you don't apply for, you know, you can't qualify for a loan. And you're saying, okay, what do I need to do? And they go, go to somebody else.
Is that a hard or soft credit pull when you apply for that home loan?
It will be a hard pull. Typically, it's a hard pull. But you can go to different lenders within a 25, 30-day period, and it won't affect your score any more than the first time.
Oh, okay. Within that 30-day period.
Right, right. So you can continue to go. You can go to one just about every day and say, can I get a loan? Can I get a loan? It won't keep dropping your score.
And the perk of having the mortgage broker is that he's going to go to all of those people at one time.
Basically, yes.
Okay.
Yes. So he'll already know, here's where you stand. Here's where this person stands. Here's where this couple stands. Let me find somebody that they'll fit into their guidelines.
Because that did happen when I bought my Mustang. It was the same situation. No. Yes. Had a great credit score and proof of income. Mm-hmm. And it was one company that was just like, yeah, we can do that. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like I was getting denied because I didn't qualify. It was just that this one just fit for what I was trying to do.
Some people just don't deal with you for whatever reason.
For whatever reason, yeah. Right. So I see exactly what you're saying. For the people that's listening, though, who don't know what a hard and a soft credit pull is, can you tell them?
That's more of a loan officer's question.
Okay, I got you.
I kind of let them handle that part of that so they can do the explanation. It shows up on your credit report as a hard hit versus some as a soft hit. Just to scratch the surface of it.
Got you.
But that's what a lender does. I let them explain that.
Okay. So now we at the part where the person they are. Well, let's talk about fixing your credit score. Paying down the debt that you have within the cards that you have acquired, mm-hmm. and keeping them under 30%. Does it?
Yes.
If you trade that 30 line, is that different than zeroing out?
Even if you zero out, that's fine. You can zero out. Just don't close it.
Okay.
Because that's a lifeline that you need. So it just depends on your interest rate. And again, I would tell you to defer to your lender because they deal with all the numbers. Mm-hmm. And so they might look at, you might have two cars and they say, well, one, the interest rate isn't that bad. This other one, the interest rate is a little bit higher. Zero this one out.
Okay, I see.
But they'll tell you everything you need to do so that it'll maximize what you need to get on the back end.
Okay. So let's say, a place like NACA, what part of the process would you recommend them being a part of the process or do you recommend them at all?
Oh, NACA is great.
Okay.
But you have to have a ton of patience. NACA isn't something that you're going to get done in 3 months or 4 months, 6 months. I've heard stories of people 12 months, 18 months. So you have to really be patient with NACA.
Okay, so you're going into it knowing that this is going to be a process.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes.
So what would you say from what you've heard is the most tedious aspects of working with NACA?
Time.
Oh, just time.
Time.
So are they dragging their feet or is it just a bunch of paperwork that they need?
They have so many people that they're helping that it takes time.
Oh, this is a DMV line.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
I see what you're saying.
Yes.
That makes so you would recommend the private lender over NACA for the expeditious
exactly
treatment
exactly
and the one-on-one focus,
because they're still going to give you this. Yeah, you would get a one-on-one with somebody at NACA, but again, if they have so many people that they're working with, once they say yes sir, no ma'am, here's what you need to do, that file goes back to the back, and so you have to wait till it gets shuffled back up again, and then they tell you, and then it goes back to the back and shuffled back up until you actually are ready. This lender, mortgage broker, has a shorter list.
I see.
And they can say, hey, I'll give you a response in two or three months, if you've done something, let's let all your billing cycles go through. Now we're back at it again. Okay, here we go. You know what? You need to fix this one last thing. If it takes another 30 days for your billing cycle to go through, yes, you're good to go. Here's your letter. Let's go and buy your house.
I see. That's a clear difference too.
Right, it is.
Okay, so I'm assuming that you've had an apartment before, right?
I have.
And you also own a home.
Yes.
So what would you say are the differences between the process for the two, as far as like what do you not have to do to get an apartment that you would have to do to get a house? And do you feel that people who qualify for an apartment aren't really close to qualifying for a house, or is it apples and oranges?
So the difference buying a house and an apartment. Apartment is something that's, I would tell people, it should be short term for them.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be something that long term, even though life happens and sometimes you have no choice but long term. But an apartment is something that being a home, let me switch to the other side. Being a homeowner should be something that you should want to do because you own it. For the sake of argument, you own it because the government still technically owns everything no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
But you can actually get a deed to your house to say, this is mine.
Mm-hmm.
It belongs to me. Yes, you could come over. No, you can't. This is my land, everything else. Versus an apartment, you're borrowing this from someone.
Mm-hmm.
It's like leasing a car versus you own it. You went and rented a car before.
Mm-hmm.
You have to give that back sooner or later if they want you to give it back.
In the same condition.
Basically. But when you go and buy a car, yes, you don't always own this vehicle, but it's more or less yours because you can get a title to it
mm-hmm.
once you're finished paying it off.
Right.
So it's the same thing. You want that deed to have this vehicle or this house yourself versus borrowing someone's place. And they're going to always go up on their lease. Or if they don't decide to fix the things that you need to have fixed, it's a problem. You have to deal with the close compactness with neighbors and anything else that goes along with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always, in my opinion, it's always better to have a house because you have more space. You have your own place. This is yours. You don't have to give this back. Your rent won't go up because now you have a mortgage payment that this is yours.
Set, fixed.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right.
Do people have the option to refinance their mortgage payment?
Always.
How long does that usually happen? Like, how long into the loan?
I mean, most people might wait about a year before they do it. I mean, I've seen it done within 6 months. It all depends also on, so let's say you had a 650 credit score, which is above the 620 that most loan officers want you to have.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not bad, but it's not the best.
Mm.
So let's say you have your 650 and you've been in your house for a while and you've worked your credit to where it's 700, 720. You might decide, hey, the interest rates have dropped a little bit, a quarter of a point, a half a point, and now I have a better credit score. Let me go and refinance my house. So now the bank will look at it and say, well, you've been paying on time for however many months. You know what? Yes, you can go and refinance your home, get a lower rate, and now that means that's less that you're paying for your house.
Give me a percentage of how often that is put on the table and how often that's actually approved.
I don't know how many, because it just depends on how many people are actually applying for it. But again, if your credit score has increased
mm-hmm.
and the interest rates are a little bit lower,
mm-hmm.
there's no reason why you shouldn't get approved.
Right, right.
There's nothing that's stopping you because you've actually done better than you did before.
Okay, I see.
So there's nothing that's stopping you at all from getting it done.
I think that's a very overlooked part of the process.
Exactly,
too,
it is. Well, okay, so now I'll tell you this. On the con side of this, if you've been in your house for, let's say, 10 years already,
mm-hmm.
and you decide for whatever reason you want to refinance because you might have financed and it was at a higher number and you realize the rates are a percent lower now.
Mm-hmm.
What that does when you refinance is you restart your whole loan. You're actually buying your house back again.
For every refinance situation?
Yes.
Oh, that's why you want to do it as soon
early.
As you... Okay, I got you.
Early in. Because again, and I've had some clients that have come to me and say, I want to refinance, especially right now with how the prices of houses are higher.
Mm-hmm.
They've actually refinanced their house, been able to pull some of this equity out of their house.
Mm-hmm.
Equity meaning they bought their house at $250. Now their house is worth $350.
Mm-hmm.
So now their house is more valuable. So they can refinance their house. And let's say they only want to pull $50,000 out, but they've restarted their loan. So they were 10 years in, and they only had 20 years left. You refinance your house. Now you're again, you're back at zero. And so you're starting this 30 years all over. But you actually have pulled some of your equity out, and you can take this $50,000 and do whatever you need to do with it.
Wow.
And possibly still keep your payments the same and or lower.
After refinancing. Wow.
Because it's your money. It's your house. It's your money. So now that's what it's worth.
So, yeah, you playing with it with a different bargaining chip.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Gotcha.
But so now if you and I told them, well, you're 10 years in, look at possibly doing a 15-year loan. Instead of doing another 30-year loan, do a 15-year loan. So the interest rates might be a little bit higher for there. But again, depending on what the numbers are coming back at, if that payment is lower, then why not go ahead and refinance so that you can have a lower payment and possibly pull some of your equity out of the house for you to do the things that you need to do, be it that you need to do repairs to your house. Hey, I want to go on some vacation time. Mm-hmm. I want to go and buy me another vehicle. I just want to put this in my savings. Whatever you want to do with it is your money.
And what you're saying by pulling the equity out is that even if it appreciated for that much, you would then take that money. So then if it appreciated from 250 to 350, you take 50. Now it was depreciated to 300. And then you take that 50 that you pulled and put it elsewhere.
Right.
Got you.
Right.
Okay. So now we at the process now where the person has worked on their credit. Mm-hmm. They have they two tax returns, they proof of income, they're at the bank and or the private lender and the broker, and they have gotten approved for $200,000. Mm-hmm. Now they house shopping.
Right. They call me.
So oh, this is the part where you come in.
That's when I come in. So they call me. You call me at 404-422-8568. I work with your lender. We have all three of us have a nice relationship because we would all have to work together to get your deal all done. Mm-hmm. So you've already gotten your approval letter. You come to me with your letter. We'll go shopping. We go look for houses. We go and put in contracts, do whatever we need to do to get you squared away into a house. Mm-hmm. Once you get a house under contract, once the seller agrees to your terms of buying their house and everybody has come together and says, yes, they'll sign this contract. And so now it's a fully executed deal. That's when I take this back to your lender and let them know now they're ready to go ahead and finish this process. Your lender goes in and does all the other things that they need to. They really start to make sure that you can own this home. They know you can before, but they go ahead and really, it's a long process, anywhere from 15 to 30 day process. Mm-hmm. They have to go in because you have to go and get an inspection on your house. You have to go and get an appraisal on your house. Mm-hmm. That appraisal is make sure that what you're buying this house is actually what it's worth. They're not going to let you buy this $250,000 house and it's only worth $225,000.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Does it work the other way around?
Now, if it's worth $300,000, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you're great. You're good.
You caught a steal.
Yeah, you are. You're right. Mm-hmm. But they won't let you pay for a house for less than what it's worth.
Got you.
So once they go through all those paperwork, all that paperwork, and they put everything together, that's when you're well on your way to becoming that homeowner.
This is what we call closing?
That's when we come to closing. We come to a table and everybody signs off. The seller signs off their rights. Mm-hmm. You, in turn, say, I am agreeing to the obligation of paying this loan back to your bank.
To the bank.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so the closing attorney basically files all this paperwork, makes sure everybody gets everything done the correct way, file it in the courthouse, and you have your keys and you get to go home.
So your name is on it, but the bank owns it.
Oh, always. Yes. Okay. Until you finish paying it off. Just like your vehicle, mm-hmm. Your name is on it.
But the lien holder owns it.
Exactly. Yes.
Do they also own the land too, or is it just the house?
So real estate is actually selling of land.
Okay.
The house on the land makes the land more valuable.
Oh, okay.
So technically when you're buying a house, you're buying the land from the center of the earth all the way up through the sky.
Gotcha.
That's your space.
And that's powerful.
Yes, that's your space. And so, but the house on it makes that land. So if you go and buy an acre of land, you might be able to find an acre for $30,000. Mm-hmm. Well, if you look on the tax records, it'll say this land is worth $30,000. Mm-hmm. Once you build a house on it, it improves what that land is worth.
Oh.
And that's why you have to, and so the county would come back and reassess it and say, well, now you've put a house on here. You've made this better. So now this land is worth $250,000 to $300,000. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to tax you accordingly.
I see.
And that's how they figure out your taxes for the year that you own on your house.
Based off of the worth of what the land was before the house got there?
And what the house is worth now.
Now, okay, got you. So that's why when you have a newer subdivision that's being built, that's the best time to buy your house then, because it's going to continue to shoot up and up as the houses around it are being built.
Well, so it happens. Oh, sorry about that. It happens. It's work calling. It's always work calling. But so it doesn't matter whether you're buying a resale, meaning an older home, mm-hmm. be it that it's a year old, 5 years old, 20 years old, or a brand new home. It's still been based upon what that land is worth, what that house is on.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay, so the HOA fees.
Okay.
Why and where do they go?
Why? Because just like any regulatory industry, they want to make sure that everybody does the same thing accordingly. Mm-hmm. You don't, they, and so not all HOAs are rough. Some people say, oh, I hate HOAs. Oh, they're so bad. Oh, this and that, whatever. Well, it's just like any rules when you're going to any restaurant or when you're going to a mall or when you're going, you know, just any other place. Some people set certain rules to where you can and can't do these things. And it eliminates just anyone doing everything and making your values depreciate. So you can have some HOAs that are very lenient and say, hey, as long as you keep your grass cut, you know, that's fine. We don't care about anything else that you do. Some of them say you cannot paint your house without approval from us, mm-hmm. because we don't want your house to be purple. We don't want the next one to be hot pink. We don't want this one to be all black. Mm-hmm. We want to kind of keep a uniformity in our neighborhood. When a subdivision is put together, they all vote on a certain amount of rules. So if you go into an HOA and you say, well, I don't like these rules, the prior administration that was all there, they all voted on these rules. Mm-hmm. Are they going to change them? Who knows? But those are the rules. When you're walking into this, that's their rules. And you have to conform to their rules if you want to be in that subdivision.
And this is understood before you purchase the home?
Yes.
Okay.
So when we do the contract once the seller agrees to your contract, mm-hmm. that's when you start learning about all the things that go on in the neighborhood. And it's called your due diligence period. So this is the time when you get that HOA and you look at it and you go, oh, well, I can't do this mm-hmm. without approval. Mm-hmm. You know what? I think it's too much of a hassle. I'm going
to
leave.
And then you realize why that person's selling the house to you in the first place.
Right.
I'm just playing.
Like, and it's happened that way. Seriously. Right.
I don't doubt it. I've seen... The problem that we had with our current home is the not parking on the street, mm-hmm. because we have, not to sound braggadocious, we have a lot of cars, we have a boat, we have like, so in a regular home situation, we can't fit all of our stuff in the garage and the driveway and all that stuff, but the HOA was killing us about not being able to park on the street.
Right.
We have a big family gatherings, all of that stuff. That pretty much eliminates any family gatherings over here, and it's a nice subdivision, so this is where they should be. Mm-hmm. We bought the house to have the gatherings here, mm-hmm. so that... I don't think that they took that into consideration when they purchased the home.
Right.
So, yeah, I've seen it on both sides. Mm-hmm. So, we just discussed the property tax. So now do you recommend a person buying a house furnished over non-furnished?
Furnished or non-furnished would be up to the seller if they want to take all their things with them. So that's the seller's choice. If they say, hey, I'm leaving and I'm going over across season, I don't want to pack all this stuff up and take it with me. Mm. I don't want to have a yard sale. I have no idea how to put things up on eBay and Facebook Marketplace. Mm-hmm. I don't have a trailer to go and take this to the Salvation Army or the Goodwill. Do you want it? Mm-hmm. And it'll be up to you to say, yes, I'll take it. No, I got my stuff that I want to put in my house because your stuff is ugly. Mm-hmm. So that just depends on the seller.
Got you. Okay. And in your experiences, what hiccups have you run into that you just want people to be aware of before they even come to you, or to know that when they come to you, it may possibly happen for them?
Everything.
Everything.
Everything. I've been doing this for 15 years and no two deals have been the same. So I always tell them to just have an open mind with things because you never know what's going to happen along this process.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the first thing they do is to go and speak to a loan officer. And I've had people come and say, hey, I'm going to go look at this house on 123 Main Street. And they go, oh, I think this will be a fit for us. Mm. Where's your approval letter?
Mm.
Oh, but I know I can afford it. I don't know that you can afford it.
Right.
And Newton's law is no one's interested into something until you're interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it could have sat for 2 or 3 years. As soon as you're interested in it, that's when it seems like everyone else wants the same house.
Yeah.
And I made that mistake early in my career, and I shown a client a house, and they loved the house. And by the time they got themselves together to go and get their approval letter, it was under contract and got sold.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all they talked about is, oh, I wish I could have had this house. I wish I could. I wish I could. I wish I could. And, you know, at some point you have to say, hey, look, well, you didn't. So you got to move on. So let's go ahead and move on. So that's why I don't do it, because you have to be ready. And especially now, you have to be ready to buy a house, because no one's going to look at your offer without your approval letter, because to them, that means you can't afford a house.
Got you. So that's why the conversation start off with approval letter.
Approval letter.
Okay, I see.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So let's say that you get 250 loan from the lender for you to be able to purchase your home, and you only end up using 200. Does the other 50, do you have the option to cut that off to lower the interest rate, or what do you recommend a person does with the overhead?
There's nothing that you can do with it. You can, I mean, you technically lose it if you don't use it.
Hmm.
So you might say, hey, I got approved for 250, but I want to stay within this certain price range because I want my mortgage to be at this price point.
Mm-hmm.
That might mean that you're leaving all the rest of this there. So if you don't use that, you don't get any of that.
So, like, does it still count toward you paying back that amount?
No, because whatever you buy the house for is what you buy the house for.
Okay.
So you approved at 250, but you only use 220.
Mm-hmm.
Your mortgage is going to be based on 220.
Okay, I see.
It's not like they write you a check and say, hey, here's 250, go and buy whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever you don't use, you get to keep. No, they only finance you for whatever your mortgage is worth.
Got you. And how does that process work? Do they put it all on a card? Do they put it all in an account? How does that money move?
So your loan officer has already figured out the bank that's going to approve you for this amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
So the bank is saying, when they get all these papers together and they do all this, the execution of all of this, the bank says, I know that you're buying a house at 220.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to basically send that money to the closing attorney. The closing attorney is going to basically pay the seller for what they're doing. But you're on the hook from the bank because the bank says, I've already paid for this house.
Okay.
I've given them their money for the house. Now you owe me back. So that's why you have to pay your bank every month for your payments, because they've already bought your house for you. They've paid the seller for your house and you owe them that money.
So who's the person that gets the money from the bank? Who's that person?
The closing attorney.
Have you ever seen a closing attorney run off with that money before?
No, I haven't. I've heard a situation, and this was before I started in 07, where they've had issues and whatnot, but things have changed,
mm-hmm.
and they've been regulated, and it doesn't happen.
Okay, so you've, in your experience personally,
I have not seen that happen.
Okay. So my question now would be, in our community, in the African-American community, why do you feel that home ownership is not as praised or normalized as in every other community?
It has become more of something that is brought up more than it used to. Some people aren't aware of it. Some people are afraid of the process. Some people just don't make enough money to be able to buy that house. There's a lot of different variables behind it. And you can only help someone that wants help themselves.
Mm, mm-hmm.
So if they don't want the help and they say, hey, I'm going to just continue to rent where I am because I don't have to worry about anything, and I don't have to worry about if my air conditioning breaks, somebody will fix it. I don't care if my refrigerator breaks, somebody will fix it. I'll pay this money that I'm paying every single month. They have to want to have that desire to get up and say, I want to own this instead of keep borrowing this for the rest of my life. So once they've come to that own conclusion, because you can show them all the perks and everything that goes along with it. Mm-hmm. If they don't want it, they don't want it. They come in and say, hey, I wish I had. Oh, I'm thirsty. Well, here's a glass of water. I don't know about this one. I got every excuse why not to drink the water. Mm-hmm. Well, then that means that you really don't want this. And so it's coming to a point to where people are understanding that having things, owning parts of things helps them out, whether they want to take it and resell it or buy it so that they can rent it, so that they can bring in extra income. Mm-hmm. They're learning that this is a smart move to make. What your grandparents did back then isn't always what's best for right now, because nobody was thinking about buying extra houses to rent. They might have bought the land, mm-hmm. but they weren't thinking about building a small community so that they can go and sell or rent these houses out and bring in extra residual income.
Passive income,
not just for them, but for their great-great-grandchildren.
For the future.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's becoming more of an important fact now that they understand the importance of it all.
Okay. So just like financing a car, does the value of how much you purchase the house for go up as far as how much you have to pay for it with the loan, or does it remain the same number as you paying for it wholesale?
You said the value of it?
Right. So like, let's say you buy a house that's $100K.
Okay.
And you take out a loan. Does it then go up to 150, 175, or does it remain that?
Of course, you're going to be paying interest on this. Mm-hmm. So, of course, the quicker you pay it off, the less interest you would have paid over time.
Okay.
When you go to a loan officer or even a closing attorney, they'll give you an amortization chart, and you can actually look one up and put in, hey, if I'm buying a house at $100,000, $200,000, $500,000, it gives you a breakdown of how much you're going to be paying at a certain interest rate for the next 30 years, and you can see how much you're paying. So your first 10 years, you're basically paying interest. Then after that, it starts to change to where your principal starts to catch up with the interest. And then on the back end of it, you're paying more of your principal than interest. So those numbers, it could be the same amount throughout the whole 30 years, but the principal and interest start to do this until you paid it off. But of course, the more you pay on it, the quicker you pay on it, it actually changes that to where you're paying less interest over time.
And more principal.
Right.
Okay. And for the people who don't know what the difference between principal and interest is.
Principal is what you actually owe. Mm-hmm. The interest is what the bank charges you to borrow this money.
And the craziest part about that is that when you rent it, you're literally paying 100% interest.
Right, yeah.
No principal.
Yeah, because you're not owning anything.
Because you don't
not
own yours. Anything.
Not yours.
And that right there would be the number one reason to want to get out of that situation.
Exactly.
Immediately.
Exactly. That's why if they have any questions, they can always call me at 404-422-8568. I'll help them, walk them through this process. Even if they don't understand the conversation that we have today, they can call me and I can walk them through it again. Or even, you know, if they are already talking to a lender and they're not understanding some of the terms that their lender is telling them and don't want to ask them, they can always come and ask me. I'll explain it all to them and help them out throughout this whole process. So,
beautiful. Do you feel like there's anything else you want to touch on?
I mean, it's I'm great. I'm great. I'm glad that we've had an opportunity to have this conversation in front of everyone so they can understand what we talk about. You know, when people go and hang out, they don't always, they think we always are going out doing unmentionable stuff. But we have adult conversations about serious things, and this is one of the things that we talk about that makes a lot of sense that people should be aware about, you know. So that's I'm glad we were able to come down and sit and have this conversation. I really appreciate you.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I appreciate you being willing to have it.
Well, tell everyone how they can see everything that you have going on your social media.
Oh, okay. So at Vigilante, L-O-M, V-I-G-I-L-A-N-T-E, L-O-M on every social media platform. I want to give you guys just a little bit of backstory with why I wanted to have this conversation. What's happening is that I purchased a home with my family in Douglasville for $275,000, and that has appreciated over 3 years to $400,000. My folks now want to become full-time RVers. That's been both my parents' dreams. So now they're liquidating the home, and they're using the equity just as their free money.
Right.
And so now I'm 27 and I've been at home for the full 27 years. So I've been saving up. I've been on my parents' trade lines. I have pretty large lines myself. So they've been teaching me about finance for pretty much all my life now. So now I have the ability to go in Buckhead, which is predominantly one of the most expensive areas here, and purchase the penthouse of my dreams. Along with what he was saying earlier, now I have the car of my dreams. And that's how you want to step into your finances. So I wanted to have this conversation and share my journey with you guys at the same time to encourage you and also give you a visual example right in front of your eyes.
Right, right. And it's normal. You're just like normal, average, everyday people that are needing to be in a home for various reasons. Mm-hmm. So that's why those conversations are so important. Absolutely. So you keep up the good work and everything you're
doing. Thank you.
You keep up the good work for real. And I appreciate you coming in. You know, you're always welcome here.
I'm definitely going to be back.
I definitely will have you back too. So again, thank you all for listening. I hope you all have a great day. And again, if you need me, give me a call, 404-422-8568. I'll answer the phone unless I'm doing a podcast and I can't, but I will get back with you. Send me a text message and I'll talk to you all soon. Okay.